about humanity.
Welcome to another fun-filled edition of Victims of Fun. This is season 5, episode 12, I think. Episode 12. Seriously, we're that far into it? That's amazing to me. Season 5, episode 12. That's pretty good. So, welcome. I had to shut the fan off, so that's why I stepped away for a second, because it's brutally hot in the state of Florida, the worst state on the planet, because, you know, Florida's horrible, and it's been raining like crazy, which is stupid, because it just is. There's a lot of water and a bunch of bullshit, which I don't like, so... The good thing about when it rains is you can put your car out in the driveway and just throw some soap on it and just let Mother Nature wash your car, which is pretty cool. So, you know, you save money because, like, going to the car wash is like $8, somewhere around there. Anyway, so welcome to Victims of Fun. This is El Stevo. As usual, Victims of Fun is hosted by Anchor FM, the best podcast hosting system on the planet. You can go onto the Anchor FM website at anchor.fm and download the anchor.fm podcasting app to your phone and answer a few questions and register, and you can start podcasting in 10 minutes, and you can do it remotely from your phone. So if you meet an alien or something, you can interview them for your podcast right before they probe you. Yeah, that'd be great. And Anchor FM takes care of the monetization for you. They will upload it to various podcasting platforms, including their own, and including Spotify, iHeart, Pandora. Victims of Fun is available on all of those. And if you want to email me, you can email me at victimsoffun@mail.com. You can send me your hate mail, your love mail, or suggestions, or, you know, recipe for cookies or something would be good. And, remember to follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. All you gotta do is search for Victims of Fun, and you'll see the logo, and give us a like and a follow. And remember, you can hit the supporter button and start sending me money, because I need money. Jeff Bezos just spent hundreds of millions of dollars to go to space, and, you know, you could, like, throw me $5. So, I don't know what's going on there. You know, if I had hundreds of millions of dollars, I would not be going to space, because there's always a chance the rocket's going to explode. And what if you get up there and there's aliens and they capture you and they probe you? I don't want to get into that. So, you know, I wouldn't go into space. I wouldn't want to be the first person up there. I'd be like maybe the... I'd wait until they actually had hotels on the moon and space flight was like safer than walking down the street. And then I would go. But I remember... In high school, in shop class, they had these old Popular Mechanics from, like, the 1960s, and they were saying, oh, by the year 2000, we'll be living on the moon, and traveling back and forth to the moon would be like getting on a bus. Well, you know, I'm not on the moon. Okay? They also said, but you have flying cars, and where's my flying car? Yeah, I should have a flying car, or I should be living on the moon. Living on the moon would be cool. We were supposed to be up there, but, well, we're not. So, I don't know what's going on there. Maybe with all these rich billionaires shooting their asses up into space, maybe we'll finally get to live on the moon. Though Elon Musk said he wants to permanently live on Mars. I don't know how he's going to pull that off. But, you know, if anybody could do it, it'd be him. You know, I could see him, like, claiming the whole planet for himself. I mean, there's no... I mean, supposedly there's a treaty that says no country can claim the moon or any other celestial object. It But, you know, I don't really know the legality, how that would hold up in court. I mean, if Elon Musk spends, like, $100 million to go to Mars and claims it, in my mind, he's earned the right to own the planet. So, you know, let him go. It's just, what are you going to do? But, yeah, so Jeff, so Richard Branson went up first. And then Jeff Bezos went up. And Elon, I don't know if Elon's going up himself, but he shoots stuff into space all the time, so it's, like, really no big deal for him. He's more focused on going to Mars than anything else. The problem with going to Mars, everything I've read online about space, I'm no expert by any stretch of the imagination, but everything I've read is the biggest dangers of space travel is exposure to the radiation and the lack of gravity. Like, after a while, it turns your bones to, like, liquid, and like the astronauts on the ISS, they're, like, out of their 12 hours that they work, 10 of them are spent in, like, physical therapy. Like, lifting weights and running in place and everything to keep their bones from turning into liquid. And, like, 2 hours are devoted to science because there's no gravity. And I read that that's the big issue, that you could have the gravity on Mars supposedly is enough to where you wouldn't really have too much of an issue. But with no gravity, the two-year trip, actually, I think the quickest they could get there is like 14 months on the closest approach. But even then, they said that's, you know, the astronauts would be, you know, they'd never be able to come back to Earth, and their bones would be liquid. I mean, you know, they'd basically be squids, which is pretty horrifying. I wouldn't want to be a squid. You ever watch any science fiction, like Star Wars and Star Trek and Battlestar Galactica? They all have gravity on all their ships, no matter how small they are. Like, the Millennium Falcon, I remember reading the size dimensions, and it's something like 100-something feet long by like 70-something feet wide or something. It's, you know, a decent size. It's the size of a, you know, a decent personal motor yacht, you know, type of thing. And it's got gravity. And how does it have gravity? I mean, Luke Skywalker in his X-Wing, you know, had gravity. And, you know, Star Trek's got gravity, Battlestar Galactica's got gravity. The only science fiction show I remember that explained the whole gravity thing was Babylon 5, if you ever remember that. And until, if you ever watch Babylon 5, it's about Earth and a whole bunch of other alien species at a space station called Babylon 5, and they're all trying to live together and solve their problems, like the UN. And it's mentioned that the Earth ships, the civilian ships and the warships, don't have artificial gravity, at least in the beginning. They used spinning midsections to generate gravity, you know, as a simulate, you know, because I guess when you're spinning in space like that, it creates, you know, gravity. But they didn't have gravity in the rest of the ships. Like, when they were on their command deck, there was no gravity, and they floated around or were strapped into their seats, and it was only the middle parts of the ship that spun. Some of the alien races had no gravity at all, but were able to handle not having gravity. And then eventually, through treaties and stuff, the Earth got the gravity technology for its ships so they could have gravity. But most of the Earth fleet in Babylon 5 didn't have gravity on their ships, only in the midsections. And the Babylon station, because it was 5 miles long, had its own gravitational thing because of how big it was. And that even had a spinning thing in the middle. But so apparently that's the big deal about going to Mars, is the lack of gravity, because your bones will turn to goo. And then there's the whole thing with space radiation, which will fry your ass. I don't know how they... Yeah, you gotta remember, the ozone layer and everything else on the Earth protects us from all the radiation. That's why everybody always screams about holes in the ozone layer, because if the ozone layer goes away, the planet gets irradiated. And they think that's what happened to Mars, because Mars doesn't have an ozone layer, and it gets constantly zapped by radiation. And apparently, they said that to reverse that, they could terraform Mars and reintroduce plant life, which would, you know, create oxygen CO2 cycle and eventually would replete, not deplete, what's the opposite of deplete? Replete, replete, whatever. The greenhouse effect and would, you know, block out the cosmic rays. But the other problem with Mars is it doesn't have an active core. Like, the core of the Earth is iron and nickel liquid, and it spins, and that's what makes the Earth rotate. That's what, I don't know if it has anything to do with gravity or not, but that's what, that's what generates the field around the planet that shields us from the radiation, is that spinning core. And if the core ever stops spinning, you know, we'd lose our shield, and Mars apparently does not have an active core. So even if you introduce a type of plant that could survive the radiation and gave, you know, the ozone layer back and shield it from the radiation, you still don't have a spinning core on Mars. So you got problems. So on Mars, you're never going to be able to walk around the surface without wearing something, apparently. They said even if they terraformed it, just because of the whole radiation thing. But I don't know. But Elon Musk wants to, he wants to live on Mars. And he's, you know, I have a feeling he's going to go there and plant the Tesla flag and claim Mars for himself, you know, and we'll have to pay to go there. But I always said if I encountered aliens, I would beg them. First I'd beg them not to probe me. Then I'd beg them to take me with them and get me the hell off of this planet because everything's falling apart. But I just watched Close Encounters of the Third Kind the other day because, you know, I was bored. And it's a very good movie. And I was so jealous of Richard Dreyfuss's character at the end because he goes off at the aliens. And he's probably seen some, so he gets in the mothership and takes off, and that's the end of the film. But he's got to be seeing some cool stuff out there because, you know, the aliens, in Close Encounters, I guess they know what to do to keep him alive, you know, as far as being a human. So I'm assuming they'll have everything to keep him physically going as far as, like, food, water, clothing, toilet, you know, entertainment, you know, stuff like that. You know, I'm sure. Yeah, it's like I read there's that famous, I think it's called the Drake equation, that I remember it was in Contact, but that's a real equation. I think it's called the Drake equation, where it talks about if you look at all the numbers of stars and the numbers of everything else in the universe, statistically, there should be trillions of civilizations out there. And you got to think that there's got to be civilizations that have, like, their own version of the internet and their own version of, like, music and films and, like, a whole bunch of other things. And, you know, I always had this weird idea that, you know, flying through space, even through Earth right now, on some frequency we haven't discovered yet, is like the signal, the Wi-Fi signal for the galactic internet. And if we could just figure out what that frequency was and build a device to read it, we would be online with, like, aliens, you know, like the intergalactic Facebook or something. And, you know, you get on there and, you know, Zorg the Benevolent, you know, likes this photo and stuff. And, you know, I just used to think there was this whole intergalactic internet thing going on. Because, you know, somebody out there probably has a version of it. You know, all these science fiction movies that deal with aliens and stuff, they, you know, they're always like, oh, these aliens are so technologically advanced and wise and everything. I'm like, well, yeah, there's probably those, but there's also probably alien civilizations that are kind of like us that just, like, you know, slack off and just hang out and just, you know, do stupid stuff. You know, there's got to be stupid aliens out there, you know, type of thing. And I remember, I think it was Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. one of the characters in the book commented about rich kids in spaceships. And one of the characters like, well, what do you mean? It's like, well, you know how on Earth you always have these sightings and people getting kidnapped and probed and little gray aliens and the other characters. Yeah, he's like, those are all rich kids playing jokes on humans. They would dress up in these outfits and go out there in their spaceships and abduct people and poke and prod them, be like, oh, we need to, you know, study you because we're going to invade the Earth. He said, and basically they were just playing jokes on you because they were bored. So, you know, there's got to be some sort of civilization out there that does stuff like that, like a alien species of like frat boys and frat and sorority girls and stuff. And I remember working with a guy, and he's a total otaku, total weeb, like totally into like Japanese anime and everything to do with everything in Japanese anime. He's like big time. And we used to work together, and one day he goes, you know, with all the billions of civilizations out there, you know, the odds are there's a planet where the entire civilization is anime. I'm like, what do you mean? He's like, well, you go there and it's all anime. Like, the whole planet looks like an anime cartoon, and all the people there look like anime cartoon characters. I'm like, so three-dimensional animated life forms? Like, yeah. I'm like, well, that's not possible. That's anime. It's like, no, they, you know, they're real. It's just their colors and their skin pigmentation and their body designs. It looks just like Japanese anime. It's an anime civilization, man. I'm like, oh God. It's like, yeah, I'm gonna go there and get me a space cat woman. And I'm like, oh God. You need to be in live stream. Seriously. You need to be in live stream with my ex-girlfriend and just like committed for life. Anime planet. You know, I'm saying that, I'm laughing at it, and you watch First Contact is going to be like anime world. It's going to be like, you watch, because that's just how it goes. You know. But aliens, I guess, you know, if you're out there in the middle of the desert and, I don't know, just look for UFOs. You know, type of thing. Hey, all I know is First Contact never went well on this planet for the natives when a more technologically advanced civilization encountered a less technologically advanced one. It never went good for the lesser advanced race. So I'm wondering if we're going to get our comeuppance or our karmic revenge when some alien civilization shows up and goes, oh, you guys aren't civilized. We're going to force our religion and our values and everything else on you stupid humans. That would be the ultimate irony. Anyway, we're going to pause for a commercial break, and when we get back, I'm going to have a new feature on Victims of Fun where I point out everything wrong and give my opinion on a film and all the plot holes and everything else in it, because somebody suggested that. And we're going to come back, and I'm going to tell you about all the really messed up things in Jaws, one of my favorite movies of all time, that has plot holes that you could drive a truck through. So we will be right back. Do not dare. Don't you dare go anywhere. All right? Okay. There you go. Welcome back to part two of Victims of Fun, and this is Steve, and L. Stevo. And remember, You mail me at victimsoffun@mail.com. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. To search for Victims of Fun, you'll see the logo, and give us a like and subscribe and follow us and listen to us, and make sure you hit that support button, because I need money. Give me your money. Anyway, so I'm going to do a new thing on Victims of Fun every once in a while. I'm going to take one of my favorite movies, and I'm going to rant about the things that I find wrong with it. Now, these are all movies that I like. I'm not going to do movies I don't like, because it's more fun to criticize things you like, because there is no perfect movie. Some things have, you know, they're close, but there's always something. And today we're going to start with one of my favorite movies of all time. It's in my top five. It's Jaws. And, you know, Jaws with the shark. Dun, 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 dun. Okay, so we're going to talk about Jaws. First off, Jaws came out when I was very, very, very young. And I didn't see it in the theaters because I was too young. I didn't see it until it was on TV many, many years later, and, you know, I had commercials and everything, and then with the advent of VHS and everything, I saw it on videotape, and then a few years ago, Fathom Events, which is a pretty popular thing in the United States for showing old movies, on the big screen, had a showing of Jaws in Tampa, and I went and I saw it. You know, I've seen Casablanca, I've seen 2001, Gone with the Wind, all on the big screen. You really need to see movies like that on a big screen, because if you've seen them on TV and everything, it's, even if it's a big screen TV, it's one thing. Seeing them in a theater is a completely different animal. So, I saw Jaws in the theater, still one of my favorite movies, but there's always been issues I've had with Jaws. First off, if you've ever read the novel is different significantly from the film. There's a subplot going on with the mafia. In the novel, Hooper is having an affair with Chief Brody's wife. More importantly, in the book, Hooper actually gets killed by the shark. I'll give a quick rundown in the book. So, basically everything is the same, except Hooper comes in, and he's a local marine biologist. He's not somebody they called in. He's from the area, and he comes in because he's from the area, so he knows what's going on with the shark. And it turns out he used to be with Ellen Brody before Ellen Brody married Chief Brody. Then they start their affair up again, and then there's a thing, subplot with the mafia and organized crime, and the mayor's corrupt. And so you have that going on, and Chief Brody kind of figures out that Hooper's sleeping with Ellen Brody. The shark hunt itself in the film, they go out in the second half of the film, and the second half of the film is the fight with the shark. In the film, that fight takes place, it looks like it takes place overnight, over the course of 24 hours. They go out in the morning, they survive the night, and next morning is when everything concludes and everybody gets killed and whatever. In the book, they go out a couple times because, you know, they hire Quint, and they go out a few times with no luck catching the shark at all. And on one of the times they go out, Hooper is actually killed and eaten by the shark. And Brody, it's kind of implied that Brody could have done something to keep that from happening, but didn't. They leave it very ambiguous. And so Hooper gets killed, and Quint goes absolutely psychotic. Brody doesn't want to hunt the shark anymore, because Brody's like, the hell with this. This thing's too big. It ate Hooper. You know, screw this. You know, here's your money, Quint, but keep it. We're not going back out. And Quint goes, you know, the hell with you, this thing killed Hooper, I'll go out by myself if I have to, I'm going to kill this effing shark. And then Brody's like, alright, I'll go with you. They go out, and they have the fight with the shark, and you know, Quint gets killed like he does in the film, except he doesn't get eaten. He kills the shark, but it's the ending of the book is basically the same as Moby Dick. Quint gets tangled up into the Remember in the movie they were shooting the barrels on the shark and he had the lines. And Quint gets caught up in the lines and gets dragged down with the shark, and he has a harpoon and he's stabbing the shark. And Quint kills the shark pretty much with his bare hands with the harpoon, but he's tangled up in lines, and the boat sinks because the shark trashed it. Brody's in the water, and as the shark is, you know, the shark dies, and as he's floating into the bottom, Brody is underwater and he can see Quint, you know, dead, being pulled down with the shark to the bottom of the ocean, which where they were in Amity was really not that deep, because it's where they are is probably maybe 40 feet down, if that. But it's basically the same ending as Moby Dick, where Ahab goes down fighting Moby Dick and gets caught up in the lines and drowns. So that's the difference between the book and the film. So we get to the film, and you know, the shark starts attacking people, and they know the shark's attacking people, and you know, they have Quint, and at first nobody believes them. And then, you know, they see the shark finally, and they see the shark kill somebody, and they see the shark in the kiddie pool pond area, water area. So they know there's a big shark out there. So my first problem with this is, at that point, you are a police officer, and it is your job to protect the island and its inhabitants. The mayor, knowing the shark was killing people, opened the beach anyway. At that point, as a chief of police, you were supposed to arrest the mayor and throw his ass in jail, because it's his fault these people got killed. And in the movie, he doesn't do anything to the mayor except force him to sign the paper to hire Quint. Okay. Number two, in the film, before the hunt for the shark, Brody and Hooper go out because Hooper wants to see if they can find the shark at night, track his feeding patterns, and see basically what his territory is. So they go out in Hooper's boat. Hooper's boat is a fiberglass, state-of-the-art marine biologist boat. It's big. It's got all this tracking equipment on it, all this radar, sonar, and everything else. And they go out there, and that's where you have that famous jump scare of the guy in the boat. You know, his head comes out, and Hooper's like, ah. Okay, so now keep in mind that Hooper has this boat. And there's a line as they're out there where, you know, Brody is looking at this boat and all the equipment and goes, this stuff looks expensive. And Hooper goes, it is. And Brody goes, does the Institute pay for this? And Hooper goes, no, I pay for most of it myself. And then Brody goes, are you rich? And Hooper goes, yeah, actually I am. And then Brody goes, how much? And then Hooper goes, well, me or the whole family combined. So it's established that Hooper has access to a shitload of money. So keep that in mind. Hooper has access to a ton of money. Hooper and Brody are out on a brand new fiberglass, state-of-the-art marine biologist vessel, tracking sonar, radar, fish, everything to track a shark. So the shark attacks people, and then the mayor doesn't get thrown in jail, which he should have been. So Brody hires Quint to go out and kill the shark because Quint is a fisherman. And Quint is a very good fisherman, apparently. Apparently. And kills, she may, he's got a shark jaw on the front of his boat. And if you go into his little cabin, they have a scene in there where he's boiling shark jaws. So he's a fisherman for a living. He knows how to fish. So, why don't you call the Coast Guard? Okay, why are you relying on a guy who you've already incinerated is, you've already insinuated is kind of crazy, is an alcoholic, okay, and his boat, while it's a fishing boat, the Orca is a fishing boat. It's actually a Maine lobster boat, actually, is what it is. The real, if you look at the movie, that's a Maine lobster boat. It's made of wood. It's old. And it doesn't have state-of-the-art anything in it. And from what I remember from the film, it had a compass and a VHF, and that's it. Had nothing else. Had no radar, had no fish finder, no sonar, had no nothing. Okay? Had a compass and a VHF radio. And a lot of fishing gear. So, you're Chief Brody, and first off, you didn't call the Coast Guard and go, hey, why don't you come out here with some, like, heavy weaponry and help with the shark and kill it? All right, so there's a problem right there. Number two, you're Chief Brody, and you see this boat, and you're like, I'll tell you what, Quint, you can go out on that boat. Mr. Hooper here has a state-of-the-art fiberglass boat that is designed for tracking sharks. It's got sonar and radar and everything else in it. And I'm going to be on this boat with Hooper. And the two boats are going to go out together. And Hooper's boat will find and track the shark. And then you can kill it. Now, let's get on the 30-year-old... Remember, this movie's from 1977. Let's get on the wooden boat that was built in the 1950s. With no gear on it. Except a couple fishing poles and a rifle that doesn't do anything. And let's go out there and hunt a 25-foot shark. Now, this brings up the other problem. So, they're out there and they're chumming in the water. And you have that great scene where Brody's chucking a chum in the water and the shark comes up for the first time. And everybody's like, oh shit, look at the size of that thing. And the shark's 25 feet long. The largest great white shark ever filmed is 20 feet. Her name is Blue or Deep Blue. She's a female, lives in South Africa. She's tagged, and she's there. They know when she shows up and everything, and they've free swam with her. Apparently, she's old and I guess doesn't care about humans because she's so big she doesn't see them as a threat. But officially, she's the biggest great white shark that's ever been recorded. Now, there are instances where in the older days, bigger ones were caught and seen, but you know how it is. Unless you got photographic evidence or a scientist or biologist measuring it, nobody's going to believe the fisherman. But supposedly in Cuba, a 33-footer was caught way back in the day. But, you know, because there was no photograph of it, even though there were like a bunch of witnesses and everything that said, yeah, this thing was, you know, 30-something feet long, and a 40-footer was actually seen reliably by some naval personnel, but of course there was no video back then. But anyway, so, it was probably a megalodon. So, now you're Brody, and you're Hooper, and you're Quint, and this shark is about the same size as your boat, because the Orca is really only 25, 26, 27 feet long at the most. Now, three things. You have three people. You have a marine biologist who is very, very, very... He's a PhD. He's a doctor. He knows all about sharks. He has never seen a shark this big before. And he's on a very old boat. At that point, his expertise should kick in and go, you know what, guys? This boat ain't going to handle it. Let's turn around and go back in because this thing is too big. Two, you have Chief Brody, who paid for this expedition and basically is calling the shots. And he could say, you know what, Quint, since I'm paying for this, I am ordering you to turn around and go back into port because this shark is too big. And I'm paying for this, so you're going to keep your money. It's turn around and go back. Now you're Quint, and you were on the USS Indianapolis, and you saw most of your friends eaten by sharks. You've been fishing your whole life. You're a fisherman. You've caught great whites before. You know everything about sharks and fish. You would think something that big, and looking at the boat you're on, with all your expertise, you would know you're in over your head. And you should go, hey, you know what, guys? We're in over our heads. Let's go back and get another boat. Because there's more than one fisherman in Amity, and we're going to need help. Now, None of that happens. They're like the Suicide Squad. They're just going to go and do it. So, at that point, why isn't... So, Brody says, we need to go back. We need to go. Quint's like, no, we're not going back. Now, Quint says, we're not going back. You're the guy who paid for the trip. Quint's disobeying you. You're a police officer. You're the chief of police. Quint, turn around and go back, or I'm going to throw you in jail. Well, you know what, Brody? I'm the captain of the boat, and the captain is the law. Well, guess what? Chief Brody's got a gun. Pull out your gun, point it at Quint, and say, turn the boat and go around. Go back in the shore. And if Quint says, Brody, you're going to have to shoot me, you shoot Quint. You shoot him in the arm or something to where you disable him, and you tell Hooper, who was revealed in the film to be a pretty world-class sailor, did an America's Cup, did a transatlantic and everything, Hooper, get on the helm, turn us around, bring us back into port. Nope, doesn't do that. Okay? So, the other thing, too, is how is Brody, you're going out there hunting a shark, and all you brought was your sidearm. You're the chief of police. You have access to, like, much heavier guns than a sidearm. See, Hooper was smart enough to bring a shark cage and poison that could kill the shark, if need be. All Brody bought was a sidearm, okay? Brody should have bought a couple shotguns, maybe an AR-15, maybe something bigger that could have killed the shark. No. So, they're out there against a shark that is as big as their 30-year-old boat. It's made of wood, with a psychotic alcoholic captain, and a chief of police who has a pea shooter as a sidearm, and a marine biologist who should know better and who should be telling them, guys, we need to turn around and go back. Okay? We need to turn around and go back, like, right now. Get us the hell out of here. Okay? Out of the three of the people on that boat, the only one who had a realistic chance of killing that shark was Hooper. Because he was smart enough to bring a weapon that could have killed the shark. Problem is, Hooper freaked out in the tank. In the cage. He was in the shark cage. He was all set to kill the shark. The shark surprised him, and he dropped the harpoon that had the poison in it. Because if Hooper had managed to stab that shark in the mouth with that harpoon, which really would not have been that difficult if he held onto it, that shark would have been dead in 30 seconds. Alright, Brody shot the shark with his sidearm a bunch of times, didn't do anything. Quint had a .22 rifle, shot the shark, didn't do a damn thing. Okay? After you put three barrels in that shark, and he's still submerging, and there's a line in the phone where he goes, have you ever... Brody tells Quint, you ever seen a shark do that before? And Quint's like, no. You could see, at that moment in the film, the look on Quint's face tells you he knows he's in over his head. That is the point Quint should have said, fellas, we're going back. You point the orca back at Amity, and you go. The other thing Quint does is he smashes the radio. He smashes the radio in a fit of rage so that they can't call for help. Now, you're the chief of police. This suicidal, alcoholic, crazy man just smashed the radio. Take your freaking gun out and shoot him and tell Hooper to drive the boat back to Amity. You're just going to stand there like a beta male and let this guy smash the radio. What's up with that? I mean, seriously? I mean, come on. You know? So just a lot of problems with Jaws. I know dramatic effect and everything and all that sort of stuff, but that's not the point of these little things I'm going to be doing. These little movie things I'm going to be doing is basically stuff like that. Stuff that I look at and go, you know, you should have done this. And you should have done that. And I'm, as my mother always says, you know, I'm just saying... I should call that this segment. I'm just saying. But anyway, go watch Jaws because it's a good movie. So, that's it for Victims of Fun this week. Hope you enjoyed it. Remember, you can mail me at victimsoffun@mail.com. You can follow us on Anchor, Spotify, Pandora, iHeartRadio. As always, Victims of Fun is hosted by Anchor FM. It is made on an Apple M1 AirBook. The Victims of Fun podcast is stored exclusively on a Seagate SSD 2 TB solid-state drive. And audio is courtesy of a Blue Ice Yeti microphone from the Blue Microphone Company, the best microphones on the planet. So thank you very much for tuning in next week or next time, because, you know, I do these whenever I feel like it, because that's just how I am. We'll talk about something else. God bless. Take care. Stay away from coronavirus.